A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is Sunday, 12th of July, 2020. We will continue from where we stopped. We are on page 101 of this book, The Path to Truth for Modern Day Bodhisattva. The title is All Beings Are Equal. All beings are equal. So you have the understanding and that title, universal love or metta, you will be able to understand the title. All beings, they are equal because our nature is the same. We have this Buddha nature within, the oneness nature, the original nature. So beings, apparently, when you look at the external form or at the mundane mind level, they appear different. They appear very different in the way they manifest themselves. Because when you do not base on understanding and wisdom, you will perceive them from the external form, from the content that is within their mundane mind, then all this create division, distortion, because the mundane mind is incapable of universal love, understanding. So this title, if you understand, if you have the Dhamma, you will develop the deep understanding and you will have a lot of joy. So I will read on and see what the author of this book, Zheng Yan Pasi, explained. So according to the author, he said, frequent disasters in the world and brutal killing among humanity make life intolerable for many. So this is a universal problem for humanity, because of the frequent nature's disaster in the world and the brutal killing, the result of various misunderstanding, war, riot, and even the recent racial issue created through certain nation having pandemic. So all these are giving problems to people all over the world. And not everyone has the Dhamma. If you don't have the Dhamma, don't have the understanding of this teaching, then you will be affected. That's why she said, this is truly worrisome. The Buddha reaches us, teaches us to treat everyone equally, whether friends or foes, and to show compassion to all beings indiscriminately, regardless of their status or wealth, or even the color of their complexion or their racial composition. We should emulate the Buddha's spirit by treating all people equally and offering our great love to all beings in the world. Actually, all beings have feelings. One day, I unexpectedly saw a big dog on the walkway of the Jingshi Airport. I asked the resident nun next to me, what is this big dog doing here? His name is Ta Bao, the nun said. I stopped and took a look, a closer look at him. He had a very large body, yet his tail was short and curled up like a small ball. The dog wagged its tail at me. I said without thinking, Ta Bao, why is your tail so short? He had been looking at me. But after hearing my comment, he cast his glance down and lowered his head. I realized that I had said something wrong. So I quickly added, it's all right to have a short tail as long as you engage in spiritual practice earnestly. So So this one is also a good reminder to people who have this self-inferiority complex, who look down upon themselves. So even though you may have something not so normal or not so established by birth or what, then what the author says is very true. It is all right to have all those shortfalls as long as you are engaged in spiritual practice or cultivation earnestly or sincerely. So the cultivation is more important. Whatever shortfall or karmic inheritance that you receive, those are not important because those are already set condition like that, things to be like that. So the karmic DNA coding or the karmic conditioning that brings about all these physical appearances or certain aspect of your physical health, you need to understand there are causes and conditions behind, and we have to accept them for what they are, where that is the reality. But what we can do to improve ourselves, to transform and change ourselves, is more important. That's why the cultivation is very important. As long as you are engaged in spiritual cultivation or practice earnestly, then you are beautiful. You don't worry about the shortfall or the shortcoming. So upon hearing my words, the dog looked up at him, at me again. And as I continued to walk forward, he followed me. The Buddha said that all living beings have the same Buddha nature. Then Tapao understood what I said. The nun then told me about this dog. He said one day Tapao showed up at the airport. He had a skin disease and was missing most of his fur. The nun could not bear to see him suffer, so they took him to a veterinarian. After receiving treatment and care for some time, his skin slowly healed and his fur grew back, long and beautiful. By nature, dogs love to eat meat. One day, one of the nuns took Tapao for a walk behind the Jingshi Airport, where several families live. Tapao saw some children eating meat, and he appeared to crave the meat. He stood there staring at them. The nun said to him, "Tapao, you can't have that. Let us go back to our abode for dinner." And Tapao obediently followed the nun back to the abode. Tapao had a good heart as well. On cold days, he would keep smaller dogs and cats warm with his body, just as a mother cared for their children. He had two cats living in the abode for over 10 years, a white Persian cat and a Siamese cat. They looked very different. Occasionally, they would fight with each other. When they first came to the abode, they loved to follow me around. Sometimes, they would jump into my laps while I talked with people. In the winter, they would lie on my chair, but when I came near, they would jump down and let me have the seat. I could feel the warmth they left behind on the chair. After I was seated, they would jump on my lap. Once, some overseas church volunteers came back for a visit. I said to them, "As you all know, I do not accept any offerings. But now, I hope to see harmony among you all as an offering to me." So this is something very sweet and timely because I think the author, who is the founder of Ciji, also the empress of Ciji, she doesn't receive personal offerings for her own needs and other things. She received offering for charity work and other things. So A lot of her follower or disciple, they want to make offering to her, but she always say, no, I don't receive offering for my personal needs. So one day, when they came back from overseas assignment, I think the author, the abbess, knew that there is some misunderstanding and disharmony among the Tsuchi people and followers. So what she suggested was very beautiful. So she said to them, he said, if you want to make offering, he said, I hope to see harmony among you as an offering to me. So that is a very good, tactful way of putting it. Presently, we have volunteers all over the world, all around the world. I hope that all of you in various regions and countries will work together harmoniously with one heart and one mind. Then surprisingly, he said, the two cats also heard this word. From then on, according to the author, I never saw them fighting again. Moreover, they courteously gave precedence to each other. They ate from the same bowl. When food was brought in, they would gather around the bowl and each would pause before eating, as if giving precedence to the others. As one of them ate first, the other would wait patiently, quietly, on the side. When the first finished eating, he would withdraw to let the other cat eat. They live together peacefully and harmoniously, which makes us feel that cats have the same noble quality as human beings. So when you have this understanding, you will be able to cultivate harmony. Then to do that, you need to have virtue, goodness, not selfishness, not evil roots. So all these are very beautiful example. Either animals can do, why can't human beings? Then once I saw a travel documentary. It featured a cabin cruiser traveling across an ocean. Suddenly, a pod of dolphins appeared and gradually approached the ship. They swam along the ship as it moved forward. Many passengers came out on the deck to appreciate the sight. Among the passengers, there was a scholar who noticed that the lead dolphin was slowly approaching closer to the ship. It may have sensed that the passenger would not hurt them, so it urged the other dolphins to come closer. The passenger was happy to see the dolphin, and the dolphin also sensed that the humans were friendly. Both the humans and dolphin relished the encounter. After the cabin cruiser traveled for quite a long distance, the dolphin was still following it. Eventually, the passenger waved to them, meaning to say, thank you for seeing us all. We can part from here. The dolphin seems to understand, and they shook their head and turned their tail, sending the ship off and ending that heartwarming interaction. So this one is a good way of experiencing nature. Because a lot of these so-called fishes or even animals or living things, they actually can feel you, can hear you. So these are some examples that the author had shared. But personally, when I go through life, especially when I was young, I also experienced a lot of these things. My mother too, she always talked to the plant, and the plant really responded. Then the thing that I hold on to dearly with love, whatever thing that come to me lasts very long. Then even the pen, the fountain pen last time, Actually, most of this fountain pen doesn't last, keep problem, but the fountain pen that I have so much love. It really functioned for a long time. Then even the motorcycle my elder brother lent me, it really served me well, because there is this love, there is this understanding and joy. Then I have a lot of kind thought. I appreciate what all this thing has done to serve me well. Then there are many things as if they can sense you. Even the little dog that I picked up along the street when I was young, like they understand you, they can feel you. They wag their tail, they follow you. Then they have a lot of joy, you reciprocate and treat them well. That one communicates through the heart, not through words. That's the reason why you can radiate love and metta, the environment, they can respond. Even the three devas, the non-humans, they can feel you. And even the in the forest, the animals, the snakes and whatever, when you do not have fear, they can feel you. You are harmless. But when you have fear or you have negative thought to harm them or to kill them, they can feel, then they attack you back. So all this you can find out. There's a reason why when you have love and understanding, you are sensitive. Then you can sense them. Then you can know all beings are actually the same, equal. We have that nature. If our mundane mind do not stir and react to delusion and create those negativity or mind state, then we are beautiful beings. So all this, you can develop the understanding. I read on and maybe you can have better understanding. So the author say, all beings have the same capacity to feel. If we can understand that not only humans, but all beings have feelings, we can thoroughly understand the truth of life. Therefore, Tsuchi volunteer, extend and expand their great love, Ta'ai. Having a lasting love means that life after life, we cannot bear to see other beings suffer. Great love is about loving all beings equally. Therefore, it is our goal to cultivate our mind and take good care of our heart. We must train our heart to be closer and in accord with the Buddha's teaching. Then we can guide and inspire people with the heart of a Buddha. I hope that everyone will strive on for goodness so that their mundane mind can be transformed. See, those who understand, they know. No need to transform the true mind. The mundane mind must be transformed into the Buddha's mind. This is how to truly learn the Buddha's way. So here I need to explain a bit. The Buddha's mind is no different from living being's mind, technically. The only difference is the Buddha has developed the understanding, perfected himself, and realized complete enlightenment, means fully enlightened. So that complete enlightenment give rise to that wisdom and that understanding. So the Buddha's mind is actually no different from anybody's mundane mind, except it has the wisdom, perfection of wisdom and virtue connected to that mundane mind. And that transformed the Buddha's mind into a fully enlightened being's mind. So when we talk about the three types of bodies, Trikaya of the Buddha, you will understand. The first physical body that come along with birth is a karmically conditioned functional body. They call it the Nimanakaya, means the functional body that performs the function of the Bodhisattva before he becomes the Sammasambuddha. Then his perfection and cultivation that he has developed, they are stored up in the spiritual nature, where we call it the spiritual nature or Sambhogaya Kaya. So that one can only be inherited after the Bodhisattva has cultivated and connect back to her gateway. Then the moment the Bodhisattva has developed the ability to connect, then he can inherit all his spiritual nature's understanding and perfection. So when this spiritual nature, which is the Sambhogaya, come in, it will combine with the Nimana Kaya, which is the functional body, and transform it into the third body, which they call the Dhammakaya. So the Dhammakaya is the Dhamma body of the Buddha. So when that Sambhogaya Kaya come in and connect to the mundane mind, then it will transform it into a transformed third type of body. They call it the Dhamma body, Dhammakaya. The Buddha that shares the Dhamma, proclaim the Dhamma, transmit the Dhamma. That's how the Dhammakaya or Dhamma body is able to do that. So to have this Dhammakaya, you need to have the Sambhogaya Kaya connected to the Nimana Kaya. That's how the three body Trikaya come to be. So hopefully with that you can understand. So here the author say, I hope that everyone will strive on for goodness, so that their mundane mind can be transformed into the Buddha's mind. So the meaning is you perfect yourself and you build up your Sambhogaya Kaya, spiritual nature. Then when the time comes, when you are ready, you can also become Sammasambuddha. Then this Sambhogaya Kaya will connect to your Nimana Kaya. Then it will transform you into a Dhammakaya, means the Dhamma body that can teach the Dhamma, share the Dhamma, proclaim the Dhamma. So that's how it is possible. Okay, so we finish this chapter, we can move on to the next chapter. Next chapter is transcending nationality, race and religion. So this one is a step further. Once you are able to treat all beings as equal, when you understand that we share the same Buddha nature, then you will be able to transcend nationality, race and religion. So when you can transcend nationality, race and religion, you actually avoid a lot of problems. A lot of division created by thought, through words, through concept and idea, they get resolved. Because just one word, nationality, divide human being or living being into so many nationality. Then division always create conflict, misunderstanding and argument. Then race also behave the same way. Just one word, race, can divide humanity into so many different races. And because of the different race, sometimes they look at your color of your skin. So they call you a black or negro. Then those more fair, they call them the white. So nowadays you see quite common, talking about white supremacy and all those things. And even prejudice against the black. And some against Asian, just because of certain misunderstanding created by thought. Then the worst is religion. That word also create the most controversy, the most division, and cause the most problem in the world. So if religion is not properly understood, it can lead to a lot of problem for humanity. Because religion can create a lot of split, division, and problem for the world. But if you can understand the true essence of religion, then you can do away with the division. Then religion becomes beautiful. Actually, all religion points toward what? Truth. So if you focus on the truth, then there is no division. Then why do we want to divide? Because your truth, my truth, their truth, every religion that proclaim to have the truth, these are relative truth, individual truth, pertaining to your belief system, your whatever viewpoint that you hold on to. But if you can penetrate the essence of religion, then you realize all of this religion, they point towards the same ultimate reality. That's why they say all religion claim to have the truth. Because the truth is the only reality that can explain the way things are. So if your religion is the truth, it will have that quality. But the problem with the world who is now, every religion claim to have their individual truth, which is limited, created by the thought. That's why it's egoic, and it's not a universal truth. Because whatever that is not a universal truth can never be a truth. These are called relative truth, truth according to you, because you believe it in that manner. But the real truth, which is universal, is the nature's law that can explain to you the way things are. It is only that reality. That's why those great religious teachers or great beings like J. Krishnamurti and some of the great modern day teachers, even the Buddha, they taught truth. That's why J. Krishnamurti said truth is the isness of things, only one aspect, no relative truth. Then the Buddha also said suchness, tatata. Thing is just the way it is. You have to develop the direct seeing to awaken, to see things as they are, the reality, suchness. That's why he is called the Tathagata, expert in tatata, suchness. So all this, when you understand the teaching, it becomes very beautiful. Then you will have good understanding. Now I will move on to read the author version. We see what the author has to say about this topic. Everything in the world has a pure and beautiful intrinsic nature. So this one refer to our oneness nature, our Buddha's nature, or the source. This include humanity, regardless of race or skin color. All humans have the same color blood, and we all have lovely kindness in our heart. So that is her way of expressing it. Although there are barriers between country, language, and culture, we all live on the same earth. So she got a good way of describing it. We share the same planet. Rest beneath the same sky and breathe the same air. All life deserve respect. So why do you discriminate? So this is a very nice way to put it. But human beings still cling on to division. That's the reason why these three words, nationality, race, and religion, always create conflict, misunderstanding, and argument. That's something that leads to war. It is said all living beings have the same Buddha nature. This one is very beautiful. As all beings are equal, we must certainly not discriminate against fellow living beings or human beings simply because they look different from us. All true religion emphasize altruistic love or great love. The Buddha's compassion is the essence of love. Compassionate love is exquisite. When we have compassionate love, we show loving kindness to all and feel others' pain as ours own. We respect all life and wish all beings to be happy and free from affliction. This is great love. With great love, we see neither barrier nor difference, nor differences. Only when we make no distinction between country and ethnic cities can we truly transform and save all beings, as described in the suttas. Being disciple of the Buddha, it is our responsibility to shoulder the Buddha's great vow. In order to relieve the suffering of all beings, we should extend our love to encompass everything. Broadening your heart to encompass the universe is having great love. Our love must fill the entire universe. Wherever disasters strike on earth, those who are able to help must take action as quickly as possible. So this is the Tzuji's mission statement. When Tzuji started its mission of international disaster relief in 1991, we received much criticism and pressure from the public. However, since we have been able to provide those determined to walk the Bodhisattva path with the chance to bring forth their love to help the suffering, all those pressures seems too trivial to mention now. So they managed to overcome their initial pressure or the way people perceive them, because there were a lot of negative comments, I remember, in the early days and all those things. But you have to silently observe what they do over period, long period of time. Then, of course, like all profession, there are some black sheep. So don't be affected by all those just because of some incident here and there. Then you create unnecessary comment. You have to look at the big picture, the overall. What are they really doing? Are they really contributing to society, humanity? Are they really helping the world to relieve humanity from suffering, healing the planet through their recycling activity and etc. That all the things that they do, you can observe, see, feel them. Then you make your decision. Nobody force you to make offering or donation. Like what the author personally mentioned, they don't ask for personal donation, their personal needs, all these things they don't ask. All your donation goes towards helping people, really doing charity work. They actually work for their own subsistence, sustenance. That's why they sell their own books, their product and all those things. And whatever revenue they can receive through certain project of theirs, they use most of that for their own needs and their own funding. The rest for charity, they record it separately. All the donation will go towards charity. Then even those who wants to help, even their members or their, you call it their staff, if they want to help in disaster or what, I was told, you have to pay for your air ticket. You cannot use the donor's money to fund your air ticket, stay, hotel, everything. Cannot. Yeah. So they become so discreet. So there was one incident, I remember. Wenchuan, I think China, the earthquake, the great earthquake. Then there were a lot of volunteers who wants to go and help. One of them was a doctor from University Hospital, UH. Then I came to know one, Kayamita, who has been following me for quite a while. She worked in UH, then later on retired from there. And she personally know this doctor. Yeah. Then she contacted me and said, "Brett, do you want to help this doctor or not?" He said he's going to Wenchuan. Then I heard from her, the way they have to do it is they have to come out with their own etiquette. So without hesitation, I told her, no problem. I will help. I will donate. So I remember she, together with me, we funded this air ticket. That's how we sponsor his air ticket so that he can go and help. So these are the things I witnessed, I observed, and I saw they are really doing it. It's not just verbally or maybe created to impress people or donors. No, these are volunteers who wants to go. They cannot. They were told to look for their own etiquette and funding. Of course, when you are there, they will have all the people to receive you and they will put you up at the disaster area or something. Then you don't have to worry about the rest. The rest they will take care, but your own etiquette you have to make sure you buy your own. So this is to me a very transparent and good way of setting up an organization that can receive support. That's the reason why you look at today's Ciji. After about 40 over years, it has transformed, it has become global, international, and they did a lot of wholesome things, relieve suffering, and many other very positive contributions towards society, the environment, humanity, and even the planet as a whole. And their great love is really extraordinary. And they have a lot of volunteers, and they are trained to be Dharma practitioner come Bodhisattva within society, Ren Sen Pu Sa, means Dharma practitioner or Bodhisattva practitioner. So they call it the modern day Bodhisattva practitioner. Okay, with that I will read on so that you can understand better. Suji is like a big family that transcends borders to reach out internationally. And I hope it will become a big global family. Suji volunteers overseas should develop a broad sense of brotherhood with the local, wherever they live. Since they rely on local labor and resources for their work and business, they should give back to their communities as much as they can receive. Giving back to society is a way to bring out our great love. When we give our love to others, we will in turn receive love from others. This is very true. This is nature's law. That's why even for our new corporate world, the new civilization, our new society, they recognize this. They call it CSR, Corporate Social Responsibility. Because whatever profit that listed company or corporate company make, they make from society. They make from the masses, the people. So when you are able to contribute back to society, you should play your role. That's why they call it CSR, corporate social responsibility. In a way, you contribute back to society. So likewise, for us Buddhists, Dharma practitioner or cultivator, we have the same mission. I used to have this beautiful understanding when I was young, when I was going through the cultivation. Then I used to attend a lot of Dharma talk, and I also record those talks on tape and help out in the tape library, reproduce them for free distribution and lending and all those things. Then I always listen attentively, record them, rejoice in all the good Dharma talk and sharing, then categorize them. Then I always ask myself, one day when I have the understanding, I will contribute back to society, I will share. That's the reason why in the year 2004, when I was invited to come out to share, so my nature inside told me, it's already time for you to come out and share, where the condition is there. That's the reason why I consented finally. And we are here for the last 16 years already, since 2004. But even after 1989, my mind was different. I knew it is my time to share with the world. It is my time to contribute back to society, to humanity, and to those who have affinity, to fulfill my vow, to do the thing that my nature already through its vows and understanding wanted to do. That's the reason why this segmented line, there are many things that this nature already in its vow set to fulfill. And along the way, it has fulfilled a lot. Then whatever it has created, the so-called Dharma sharing, the recording, then now with the website, and many other things that we are producing. Now the video and the short video, they are coming out very well. The short video, you should listen to them. They are so impactful, short and to the point. Especially the recently created one. Some only 3-4 minutes, some 10 minutes, some 15-20 minutes. But most of them are less than half an hour. So if you attentively listen to all this short video sharing, you learn a lot, you learn very fast. You pick up a lot of very beautiful Dharma understanding, which are the result of cultivators who has gone through the cultivation long time, and you receive it just like that, and it saves you a lot of unnecessary deviation from the truth, from the real Dharma path, Dharma cultivation. Especially the one that I share to the example of Brother Song sharing about the boss misunderstanding him. Then I think because of that sharing, many people come to understand even Pochen, Padmasuri, then later on many other Kayanamitas, and in Ingbi, they all. Then there are many who have developed the understanding, because the way to solve problem is very important. We can develop the first and second turning wisdom to hearing the Dhamma, then through reflection, contemplation, and inquiry. But inquiry must follow Dhamma inquiry. Inquiry must not follow the mundane mind, the thought process. So a lot of people fail to understand. They fail to solve problem, real life problem, life situation. It can be any of the First Noble Truth reality. It can be a relationship problem, financial problem, health problem, or even your career problem, like Song's case, and many other people's case, even Kok Lun also same, also career problem. And some, of course, is also relationship problem with the father, the brother, and the other loved ones. So all this can be resolved when you understand. And to resolve issue and problem, the first thing you have to understand is you have to inquire, follow the Dhamma way. You cannot allow the thought to come in and simply make analysis. The thought will analyze, then because it's egoic, it still hasn't developed the enlightenment and the awakening and the wisdom. So it will reason according to its views, opinion, and conditioning. So you are acting from memory. If you do that, you will not solve your problem. You will get into more and more trouble. You will entangle yourself. So sometimes your thinking or reasoning may give you some maybe ways to resolve it. Then you think this is very good. But because you didn't resolve it amicably following the Dhamma way, there will still be what they call repercussion, karmic repercussion. So it's not a permanent fix, it's not a permanent solution. So the way to resolve all these things is not to go and analyze without understanding. Yeah, the analysis and the reasoning will not solve your problem. Yeah. But human beings tend to think that is the only way to solve problem. If I don't analyze, if I don't reason, then if I don't have a way to resolve it, the problem is still there. True, the problem is still there. But why must you analyze? Why must you reason? Because, like I explained, no matter how you analyze, you will come up with more and more views and opinions according to the way you think. True or not? Then it becomes your views, your opinion. Then your thought will tell you funny thing. How can my boss do this to me? How can this guy be so rude to me? It's all about me, the ego. And the right and wrong is according to you, reality. That's how people have problems. Then when you start to present your views, your opinion, basing on your conditioning and belief system, you are imposing all this on others. Others may not have the same conditioning as you, the belief system as you. Others can have their own views and opinion. That's why when you use your reasoning, your thought process, and to analyze and to reason, you cannot solve problem. You end up having more problem, more misunderstanding, more argument. So like that day, I explained based on what my daughter shared, which was very good, is that the Buddha gave a analogy, Sankara. Sankara is like a banana stem. He said you peel it layer after layer after layer after layer, means all this Sankara activity and thinking, which can be your views, opinion. Then ultimately at the center of it, the core of it, is empty, nothing. So all of Sankara activity is the same. You think also like that, don't think also like that. Well, end of the day, the reality is the reality. You have to accept that reality. Yeah. And no meaning. Whether you think or don't think, no different. Ultimately it's empty. Everything go the way of nature, come and go, come and go. That's why it's impermanent. You attach, cling, one thing's your way, it leads to suffering, the universal characteristic. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can say, this is me, this is I, therefore this is self. There is no such thing. And if it's non-self, how can you own them? That's why you cannot own things, you cannot have things. Then these are all dependent originating, conditioned arising, causal phenomena. Not what you think, mind make are they? They are just consciousness arising and passing away, the phenomenal world of form and consciousness. So when you understand all this, you will know how to act. So instead of using the thought to reason, to analyze, when you do that, you add layer and layer and layer, the banana stem become bigger and bigger. Then you have more and more views, opinion, and belief system. Then all this become potential conflict, misunderstanding, argument. Then all these are wrong thought that condition your misery, your suffering, your fear, worry, anxiety, your unhappiness, your sorrow and your lamentation, your insecurity, your scars of memory. So all these are from memory, your conditioning. So this is not the way to free your mind to act. So what you need to understand is whatever that arise, like the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions behind. So if that is the case, means whatever that happened within the moment, that is the reality. I have to accept it first. When I accept means I don't have to think, yeah. When I accept means straight away I do not project my thought, I do not stir my mind, I am at peace. Then when I am at peace, I have clarity. Then I ask myself, I inquire, what actually happened, so that I understand. Then after that you inquire again, how can I resolve this amicably according to the advice of the Buddha? And according to the Buddha, the meditation that brings about the end of all suffering is Noble Eightfold Path. So how can you act with wisdom following Noble Eightfold Path? Your Noble Eightfold Path is incapable of negativity. Noble Eightfold Path is basically Sila, Samadhi and Panya. Everything is about right view, right understanding. That's why you have to straighten your view like Pochen came to know. Then after that, you use that right understanding and right view, yeah, like whatever happened. The first right view is law of karma. You tell yourself, you reap what you sow. So like the Buddha say, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions. Very likely it's the law of karma. Because if your boss blame you or do all this to you, very likely in the past you must have done this thing to others. So now condition arise, you become the victim. It manifests. The friction of it arise. So when you understand this right view, you can be at peace. You won't get angry with your boss. You can accept him for what he is, but he is the way he is. Finish. Then you act. Act with what? Noble Eightfold Path. Right view to be at peace. Then reflect what actually happened. Then work on the solution following Noble Eightfold Path. Arise the right thought, right speech, right action, and the right livelihood or conduct. Then the four right effort to abandon the unwholesome, to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, wrong action, and wrong speech. Then cultivate right thought, right speech, right action. Then refine upon them and perfect upon them. So this is the way to act. So you act this way, it becomes a solution. You resolve issue amicably, means nobody get hurt. When you have right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, nobody get hurt. Where these are wholesome conduct, wholesome way of communication and action. So you will act in a very virtuous way, noble way, understanding way, which will bring about harmony, solution. You can resolve things amicably so that everybody can be at peace and move on, so that nobody gets hurt, so that everybody can continue to have the understanding and the harmony to resolve things amicably. So this is how you resolve your worldly problem, your so-called life problem in inverted comma. It was never a problem until you perceive it with negativity of mind state, until you arise your wrong thought and your wrong view. So right thought and right view means accept the reality of the moment. That is the first thing you have to do. Then contemplate and reflect. When you accept the reality of the moment, means you don't have to like agree to what people say. No, like Song's case. What the boss say, you don't have to agree. Because he is the way he is. So you accept him for what he is, doesn't mean you agree. Understand? So when you accept him for what he is, you can be at peace. And that is the most important factor that you must develop. Not until you are at peace, your sankhara activity doesn't project and stir and react and create all those wrong thoughts. You cannot have clarity. You cannot act. You cannot develop the wholesomeness of mind state. So this is what Dhamma is all about. From right view leading to right understanding, then you will know how to arise the appropriate right speech, right action, and right thought, and right way to live your life, to resolve all problem or life situation amicably, so that nobody gets hurt, so that you don't have to like shortchange other people. This is wisdom. Acting according to wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path. So you don't act according to memory, because memory is your accumulation of experiences, good and bad, accumulated in your brain, which are your views, opinion, and conditioning, even your belief system. So you cannot act according to that, because before you are enlightened, you act according to that, you will have all the evil, all the negativity of mind state. The egoic mind is very strong, born of self-delusion. So when you act from there, you are not acting at all, because that one don't have wisdom. You are acting from your fear, your insecurity, your scars of memory, your phobia, your selfishness, your emotional negativity, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning, even your belief system. How can that action be pure action? Those are negativity of mind state. That's why when you are in such mind state, you realize you are not peaceful, you are not happy, you are agitated. You have a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity. So how can your mind act? These are all wrong thoughts. Otherwise, you will not condition all this. You are never at peace. You don't have clarity. You are heedless. The teaching all points to a very clear mind state. The heedful never die. If you are heedful, all this negativity of mind state, conditioned by wrong thought, the selfish thought, it can never arise. So this understanding is very, very important. So listen to the short video. They are very enlightening, very impactful, and very useful. And you should thank all those who help out. Especially the recent few, which I think a few of the Kayamita has done. I think Padmasuri, Po Cheng, Adeline, and Alicia. Then there are many more coming. I think even Sister Selena also volunteered yesterday. I saw in the website thing. So my nature rejoices. So make full use of all this that Kayamita has so like sincerely, generously reproduced for you to help Kayamita develop the faith and the understanding, so that they can also progress along the path of Dhamma. So this is the application part. If you know how to apply the Dhamma, you become beautiful. You can walk the path of Dhamma beautifully, and you will transform. Then you will become a blessing to all. Then you will hold the embodiment of the Buddha's teaching, especially his Noble Eightfold Path factors. So that will transform your life. It will make you beautiful. Then you will get to reap all the reward of your hard work. Then the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda, you get to live them, the life of enlightened being. Okay, I will read on. This kind of love is not limited personal love, rather is a universal love that embraces all people. With everyone's loving kindness and combined strength, love transcends all barrier. So when you have the great love of Ta'ai, you really can have the strength to transcend all difficulties or barriers. We are fortunate to be living in an era of advanced technology and convenience of transportation. So this is our new society. She hasn't really seen the real movement yet. But at that time when she wrote this book, it's already, the era of advanced technology is already there. But now it's moving even faster with the 5G technology, the AI, a lot of possibility now. Then of course transport system, convenience of transport system. Now also we are moving in the right direction of green energy and the way to curb pandemic and all this thing. They call it the new normal, new way of living life. The emphasis is on hygiene. Then also more and more awareness of less of this racial disharmony or color discrimination. So all this, I think they are slowly evolving and picking up. So this part is very true. Traveling around the world is not a problem anymore. But at that time when she wrote this book, she didn't know got pandemic. So got pandemic, traveling around the world is still a problem now. Therefore, we must seize the opportunity and try our best to help those in need as long as we can reach them. For example, Tsuji volunteer has been to places such as Utopia, Rwanda, Cambodia, Nepal, Chechnya, and Azerbaijan to provide humanitarian aid to relieve people of their suffering. Tsuji volunteers also actively serve their local communities. In addition to giving aid to the poor and educate the rich to help the poor in their own area, overseas volunteers also travel to neighboring countries to provide them with timely aid whenever disaster strikes and where there is much poverty and sickness. So these are very wholesome projects or what they call community assistance work. One person cannot do all things in the world. It's necessary to call on everyone to accomplish things together. This is very true. For this reason, we must first start with ourselves, then motivate those around us to bring forth unified strength to help others in the community. So even our own Kayanamita community is also the same how we started. We really need sincere people with the faith, volunteers, and selfless people who is willing to sacrifice their time, their resources, and their donation and contribution to make all this possible. So the way we progress is actually very fast. You look at the way the website come out, and now I look at the amount of video that is coming out. This is going to last very long, and many people will learn and benefit from it. And all this understanding will unfold soon, maybe over the next few years. People, when they start to understand and appreciate all this teaching, I can guarantee you, the Kayanamita force or the consciousness of Kayanamita become very different. That it can bring forth the transformation. That's why the individual must change. When the individual change, it will touch the heart of those that are around them who can receive the benefits from them. Then from there, like the pandemic, instead of spreading pandemic, you're spreading Dhamma. So one touch many, many touch many, many, many. But you must get the right one. If the one that touch spread the wrong one, then it will not give you the effect. It will make the thing worse. It will create conditioning and belief system. Then all these people who are affected by their views and opinion find it very difficult to learn new things, to learn the maybe authentic true things. So we have to be careful. It's like karma. In Hokkien, we call tua ho tua pai. If you use it correctly to promote the right thing, the wholesome thing, the beneficial thing, then it will be very beautiful. But when you promote the wrong thing, likewise, it's equally powerful. So it's just like technology. It's not the fault of technology. It's the user of technology. If we have wisdom and understanding, we know how to use and apply technology, then technology becomes very beautiful, very useful. But if you don't have the understanding, the user of technology is deluded, heedless, then technology can go the wrong way. Then it can lead to a lot of misery, misunderstanding, abuses, and cause downfall. Okay, I will read on. Great love transcends not only nationality and race, but also religion. So this is the ultimate aim. All regions should respect one another. After the South Asia tsunami in 2004, that was the year I came out to share, Tsuchi built great love villages in Bandar Aceh, Indonesia, for the local homeless population, which include people who lost their home in the disaster and those who were already in poverty prior to the disaster. These people needed help. Tsuchi not only provide them shelter, but also spiritual support. Therefore, in areas where the majority of the residents were Muslim, they also built mosques for them. Many of these people have lost their loved ones, and they still have a difficult road ahead. Faith is an important source of comfort and solace. So when Tsuchi volunteers engage in humanitarian relief effort, they neither promote their own religion nor try to influence others to change their faith. You don't have to do that. They respect the religious belief of other people. At relief distribution site, for instance, care recipients often say to Tsuchi volunteers, "I'm grateful that God has sent you here. God bless you." Some Tsuchi volunteers would follow their lead by saying, "Thank you, Lord." Yet, although those volunteers demonstrate the philosophy of great love, they did not completely fulfill our mission of working for Buddha's teaching for sentient beings. We do not actively preach our religion, but we hope to let others know that the source of our pure great love comes from the Buddha's teaching. So you don't have to like promote your religion or glorify your religion. Why? Because the virtue, the wisdom that arises from your respective religion, it is the essence, the true one. They are the same. Yeah, this is universal truth, universal value. So it's a better way to leadership by example. When they see you have such kindness, generosity, and goodness, you are so helpful, you are so sincere, that you really came all the way to relieve their suffering. People can feel you. They can understand you. Then they will be interested in knowing what makes you this way. So to me, the individual must transform. And the individual transform, you will touch the heart of the rest. This is what I mean by transform yourself first. Don't be too eager to teach or share. even to your family members, my advice is develop the cultivation, apply the Dhamma and change. When you change, your loved one can feel you, can sense you, and they will have a lot of joy. Then they will believe what you say, they will follow what you advise them. Otherwise, not easy, I tell you. A lot of Buddhists, so-called Buddhists, they are too eager to change people, especially their own children or their loved one. Oh, they tell them, told you to be mindful, you never want to be mindful. When you say too much of that, it will backfire. Because they don't understand what you are trying to tell them. You are telling them the wrong message. Well, mindfulness is not just to have good memory. Mindfulness is just awareness to develop the understanding, not the type of what they call Buddhist words that people use loosely, not in the proper way. Because there was one example last time, one Kriyanamita. He thought mindfulness means when you eat, eat mindfully means you don't make noise when you eat. Your spoon won't fall, your plate won't have problem. So whenever the children like absent-minded or make mistake, then they will get scolding. He said, told you to be mindful, you never listen. Until one day, I think the son tell back the parent. He said, Papa, enough, I know what you are trying to tell me. Oh, he got so angry. He said, I tried to teach him Dhamma, but he react back to me this way. I said, definitely they will do that. Why? Because they don't see you change. You are so crude, they don't want to end up like you if that is the type of Dhamma that you are teaching them. Because you still shout at them, violent. You never understand what the Buddha's teaching is. That's why later on only that Kriyanamita starts to understand. Then he starts to listen to what I advise, heal the advice of me. Then he developed the understanding and applied the Dhamma and he changed. And after he changed, the wife also can see. Then the wife very happy. The wife say, yeah, I think you should go and attend more of Brother Teo's session. Because the wife can see him change. He is no longer very like authoritative and like everything also want to make decision. So now he become more sensitive. He starts to feel for the wife, for the children, and let them have the understanding. Then develop the new understanding of Dhamma. Mindfulness is to have the awareness, to observe, to understand, and become beautiful. Means to have love. Not to get angry, to react and tell people all. That is not understanding condition. When you understand condition, means when there is condition to share your Dhamma, then you share, then people will listen. Otherwise, you yourself so cruel, you haven't transformed, you haven't had the Dhamma, you don't even have the ability to apply this teaching to change yourself. Then how can you change others? You can't. So self-observation is very important. If you have transformed, you will know through your awareness. You no longer react and stir your mind like before. You are more at peace, you are more heedful, you are more aware. If you have not cultivated the heedfulness, your daily mindfulness, the Noble Eightfold Path, how can you change? If you yourself cannot change, how can you expect others to listen to you, to learn from you? Definitely it will fail you miserably. So this is a good understanding when you are not able to develop the understanding yourself. You can't change. And when you can't change, how can you change others? Because you don't hold the embodiment of the teaching, the Dhamma. Because you yourself lack understanding. You don't know how to apply the teaching. So be patient. Develop faith. develop understanding, cultivate accordingly, develop the daily mindfulness, observe, see, transform, then straighten your view, then develop the application of Dhamma, apply Noble Eightfold Path more and more, act according to wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path, not acting according to memory, be mindful, be observant, develop more and more wholesomeness, awareness, mindfulness, be sensitive. These are the Dhammas. So do your religious routine, develop your daily mindfulness, transform yourself. Then what you want to do will become possible. Okay, I will read on. Oh, okay. On the other hand, there are Tsuji volunteers who can truly fulfill the mission of working for Buddha's teaching for sentient beings. Tsuji volunteers in South Africa are a good example. They respect the Christian and the Catholic faith of the local people. Therefore, Catholic priests and Christian pastors also participate in their local Tsuji activity. They get along very well with one another. And their pastor tell those congregations during sermon, we should emulate Tsuji volunteer. The Buddhists from Taiwan love us and help us tremendously. There is even a group of Zulu women who are Tsuji volunteers. For many years, they have been visiting AIDS patients in the local village, traveling over mountains and rivers to bring care to the people, to people suffering in remote areas. When patients pass away, these Zulu volunteers who are of a non-Buddhist faith chant the name of the Buddha for them. The Dhamma is like water, whether it's in a river, brook, or spring. All water eventually flow into the ocean, just like water, selfless love, or Dhamma, essence, nurtures everything on earth. When we have love, we must express it courageously. To relieve others' suffering and give them joy is to work for sentient beings. It is also truly working for Buddha's teaching when we propagate the Dhamma. Okay, we are finishing. People's lives are closely connected. There should be no distinction between nationality, race, and religion. You can do that, it's very good. Tsuji spirits of great love means treating all people like family. Whether or not we know one another, we must love and help one another, extend our love to all humanity, all human beings in the world, and diligently walk the Bodhisattva path. The emphasis is always walk the Bodhisattva path. Do you realize that? Then there will be enlightened love in many places around the world. Because Bodhisattva are truly exceptional great beings. They are beings that have the great vows, the four basic vows of great Bodhisattvas. They vow to take across all living beings, irrespective of race, nationality, and religious belief. All beings. They vow to bring them across. Then they also vow another three very important vows. The second one is to severe and endure all suffering. If they can severe and endure all suffering, means they have the Dhamma. They will never suffer anymore. Then after that is to cultivate and perfect all wisdom so that they can develop the perfection of wisdom. So when they have these two, the second and third vow, they can fulfill the first vow. Then the second and third vow is also in preparation for their ultimate fourth vow. Fourth vow is they vow to perfect the 10 perfection until they reach the consummate of Buddhahood, means the realization of Samasa Buddhahood. So all these are the great qualities of a Bodhisattva, And those who carry this vow, they have wisdom, they have virtue, they have understanding. Their faiths are very strong, unshakable. And they come for the living beings. They already have the understanding of the teaching. Finally, they will realize no thought, no mark, and no dwelling. Their mind are completely free. That's why it can have selfless love, selfless nature, where they will know there is no mark of a self-cultivating, no mark of living beings, no mark of society, Dhamma, existence, and everything else within the conditioned world. So when you ultimately penetrate with wisdom the universal characteristic and see clearly the anatta nature of all things, then you become beautiful. You become a great being. You can have that great compassion, love, and you can express them because you will know how to come and how to go or return. Then you will understand all this karmically conditioned form and mind is a vehicle and tool for you to come. This one is not real, but it's connected to your karmic nature. It's karmically conditional from your karmic nature. Then you use it with understanding. So all this understanding will come back to you when you have that cultivation developed appropriately and correctly. So this is the message that you need, as cultivator of the way. With the understanding of the Buddha Dharma, you can transcend nationality, race and religion. Then you can go beyond duality, all views and opinion. Then you can also transcend all mark. That's how you can have universal love, great love. Then you understand that nature is so beautiful. We are all the same because of that beautiful Buddha nature. The Buddha nature is the oneness nature, the source of all things, the original nature before everything arises. So we will return to the source. That is also the unconditioned Nibbana. So the teaching is so beautiful when you understand. Okay, with this we will end our sharing. Oh, just nice, almost 4:30. Then we can have our meditation. So now we will off the light, and maybe I will give you 45 minutes of meditation. We can end the meditation at about 5:15, so that we will have 45 minutes of meditation reporting Q&A. Okay, relax body and mind. Then remember the four support. Relax, maintain awareness. Don't try to know, don't do anything. Let your mundane mind settle down and become very quiet. Initially, it may take you longer, but if your spiritual faculty is already there, very fast. Sometimes within a few minutes, you settle down into the silent mind, the quiet mind. But for most people who don't have their spiritual faculty developed, maybe it takes you longer. Then when it takes you longer, don't worry. Whatever you are able to be aware, especially from your senses, just aware. Away. Don't let the thought proliferate, like hearing. Whatever you hear, just away, finish. Then if you are sensitive already, your heartbeat, your whatever vibration within your body, wherever you locate your mundane mind, it will have the ability to be away. Away. Just away. Stay with it. Be with it. The heartbeat is also the same. The awareness of the life force is also the same. So whatever vibration or any of these tactile thing, wherever you feel them, just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Then after a while, because you don't give it any more thought energy, then all this sankhara activity will slow down. Then you will experience a quietness, sudden shift in consciousness. Without words, it will come. then you know you have progressed. Then your mind becomes very quiet. Then the awareness nature starts to surface. Then you start to experience the awareness nature. Then it's very near your thinking mind, your thought. Initially, you realize very fast the thought come out. Then you know already that one is the thought. That one is trying to know, perception, trying to create words already, verbalize, chattering. Forget about it. Go back to the awareness. Just relax away. Maintain awareness. So the awareness is very important. Just aware, finish. Don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. So your meditation will progress, okay? You can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. Then always remember, you have to stabilize your daily mindfulness. Whatever you have developed through the former meditation, you will have to develop the ability to be aware more and more, more and more. Then stabilize the awareness within until your mind enters the deep, until the mind is always just aware. Then when you come out of the meditation, your mind state will become very different. Everything you do, you are in the state of awareness. When you are able to develop that stability of mindfulness, you will become different. The individual, the former mind will understand that at that time, your awareness and your bodily activity or kaya activity, they will always move as one. Then your mind becomes very different, very calm, very quiet, full of awareness, with clarity. Then everything you see is in city. It's like the awareness and the phenomenal move as one. Everything you hear is also in city. Smell, taste, tactile, thought process, they are all in city. Then your mind becomes very quiet, very still, just aware most of the time. Then you have to continue with that stability of mindfulness until throughout the day, whatever you do, you are aware and mindful within. There's an inner awareness that is aware of outside. Even when you move your hand, when you walk away, standing away, bending, stretching, touching, aware, looking forward, aware. Whatever you do, you maintain awareness to stabilize your daily mindfulness. You can determine to be aware throughout the day most of the time, then you will progress very fast. Okay, so with that, we will move over to the second session. Second session is meditation reporting. Together with any question that you may have, Q&A, question and answer session.
Hello, Brother Theo.
Ah, yes. Who is it?
Po Ching here.
Ah, Po Ching, Sadhu. Ah, very good. Yeah.
Yes. Amitofo to everybody.
Yeah, Amitofo. Yeah.
Actually, I just want to say something about my meditation.
Ah, very good, Sadhu.
Lately, my meditation has kind of like changed a bit. So,
very good.
The thing I notice about is when I meditate, like what you said, very fast it goes into stillness, like very quiet.
Yeah.
Right? There's no much sankhara thinking anymore.
Yeah, very fast. By now, yeah, you will go in very fast. Yeah.
Yes, it's a lot faster than the last time when I...
Yeah, much faster, yes.
Yes. So the
but
thing
you
is,
you have already like, developed the understanding. Very good.
Yes. Yes. So now it detects the heart all the time, you know.
Yeah, all the time, non-stop.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, non-stop.
Yeah.
So just now when Brother Teo was teaching, right?
Yeah.
So the heart, huh? It lies so mesmerized by the teaching, it beat very hard, you know. It beat very
started.
Very
hard. Correct. Yeah.
It beat very hard, you know. It's like it understand what you say. Wow,
yeah,
it's like it's like. It automatically do by itself, right? Just
very
hard, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then always remember, relax.
Relax into it.
Then the joy, everything will follow.
Yes. So then after that, when it's quiet, sometimes I can see my thought trying to come out, you know.
Yeah. Because they are very near. Mundane mind, the thinking mind is very near the awareness nature. The two are very near. And
so sometimes it flip in and out,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. It will move in and out.
Yes, but it doesn't do anything. Understand. Just come in and out, you know? But it doesn't
that
do anything.
That is what
just
is happening, yes.
Yes.
And
so
later
it,
on, most of the time, you are just aware from inside.
Correct.
Then whatever movement from inside out is the mundane mind. Then you can see that movement, that activity. It becomes very different, very slow. Like slow down for you to see. Then with the clarity and the understanding, you can see all the movement very clearly.
Yes. The movement I can see very clearly.
Yeah.
It click in and out, you know?
Yes. Sadhu.
So that is the change I see in my meditation, you know?
Correct. And you will see more and more of that as you stabilize that nature. Then when you come out into the daily life, it becomes very different again. Then you can decide what you want to do. Means you are like the user of that mundane mind. You want it to be silent, it will just be silent and maintain awareness. Then most of the time you are with a specific phenomenal awareness. Then once in a while, when you want to arise thought, the thought will come out. Never mind, let it come out. Then when you want to reflect, contemplate, then you want to be with the moment and understand the amazing nature of the awareness or what, you will be able to do it and you will have that understanding. That's why it becomes so beautiful, so amazing. Then that nature, you can just stay there and that thought doesn't move. Then all of the phenomena that arise within the phenomenal world of consciousness, you can see them. They are like slow motion for you to see. Then you can decide whether it moves or it doesn't move. That's why that mind becomes very different. Then you continue to live from the heart, from the awareness. Then you become transformed. Then that whole form and mind will become different. It will understand what the mundane mind is. And the wisdom and the understanding is the one that use it. And yet you are not deluded by it, not deceived by the external phenomenal world of consciousness and form. All those things cannot do anything to you already. So you just use it to live. And every moment of life is so beautiful. So pristine. That is like everything you see now is different. It's so new to you. It's not like last time. All the memory keep on coming out. Then you perceive the words, the concept, that idea, that thing. But now no. Now you see truth. You see reality. You see all those things before the words and the perception. Then later only the perception come in. Then you can experiment with a lot of things that this nature starts to develop the transformation and understanding. Then your life becomes like very different. Now everything you see with that pure perception before the words and the idea or the concept come out. It's just that pure awareness. So beautiful. Then everything is like new, everything is like very pristine to you. Then you start to develop the joy, the understanding. then you will not be deceived by the idea or the concept or the words. That's why when people see something, they always use their memory and come up with the word and the concept first. Then they fail to see, because that thing will create thinking, memory. Then they don't see. But when you really see things as they are, you are with the pure perception, without word, most of the time. Then when you need to understand, you need to describe it, then only the word surface. It becomes very different. It's the other way around now. It's just like the best example is the microphone. Last time when people pass me the microphone, I take for granted. The microphone is the microphone. What is there to see? Then you actually look at the image. The word is you look at the image. You don't look at that thing which you call microphone. So that image become the thoughts, like the kids play thing. Understand? So when you look at that image which you define as microphone, then you are not looking at the whole microphone without words. But when you are looking at the whole microphone, you see things as they are, the whole thing without words. And that one give you clarity. Everything is like very pristine. It's like a lot of things you never see before. Well, last time you look at the image, you never look at the thing. Then when you look at your loved one, also same. You look at your house, also same. It's like you never really look at it before. So everything become very pristine. Like without the words, without the concept, without the image, you see things as they are. Then you start to have this ability to see more and more things as they are, as they are. Then less and less sankara, less and less thinking. That's how you transform. That's how the mind become very different. Then there is so much joy. Then the thing you understand, people cannot understand, because people is not in that state of mind. They are not with the awareness nature. That's why they cannot see things like that. The direct seeing is never happening. Or they never have the ability to see things as they are, the direct pure perception before the word, before the concept. But those who try to use knowledge and see like that also get entangled, because you cannot do it one. Before the awareness stabilized, you cannot see it one. Then you try to see without the word. That one is the thought trying. You cannot do it. It makes you worse. You become not natural. Then all those so-called imitation will not succeed, because that is not the pure mind, not the silent mind, not the awareness itself. When the awareness see, is automatic. The thing just happened. You don't have to like try not to arise the thought, try not to arise the one. No need one. It's just like that. Away. Finish. Then when it need to arise, it arise. It need to know, it know. It will still perceive, but it will not continue. Then you realize the mind become very different, very quiet. And most of the time it's away. Away. Then all those heedless mind state, thinking, anxiety, worry, fear, insecurity, they are like wiped off from your mind state. Your mind don't have those things anymore. Well, you can understand after you straighten your view, everything is just the way it is, the way it is, the way it is. Then you can accept the reality that everything you see becomes so pristine, so different. That's how your life become completely transformed, your understanding completely transformed. Then you can really come into deal with the Dhamma. Then all the Dhamma becomes so beautiful, so meaningful. The words all stand out because you have realized it through that silent mind, through that pure awareness within that nature that has transformed you. Okay?
Yes, thank you, Brother Teo Ji. That's so true, you know, that everything you say, it kind of like so meaningful to me, you know.
It
really touched into my heart, you know.
Yeah, your nature, yeah.
Yes, yes. So It's very, very different from the usual, the last time,
yeah,
you know, my past experience.
Gone.
Yes.
Because all your previous experience, they are thought-based, very active, the thinking, the images, the words, the concept, the idea. The Sankara activity is entangled with all those things. That's what the Buddha meant by heedless.
Yes,
when you
yes.
are not aware, you are heedless. Then a lot of this wrong thought, condition, the negativity of mind state, those all those emotion, negative feeling, negative emotion, the evil roots, the five mental hindrance, they arise because of sakayadity, self-delusion. You lack mindfulness, you lack heedfulness, you lack the spiritual faculty, especially sati, awareness. When your mind is not aware, it cannot see, it cannot understand, it cannot transform. So it creates thought, sankara. That's why it will analyze, it will reason, it will create more and more views and opinion and entanglement. That's how the division keep on happening in the world. Yeah. Then when you transform, you start to see all this. Then you start to understand all this. Then you start to reverse the way you do things. You start to straighten your view. You know all this are due to your wrong thought, wrong view, conditioning. That's why it becomes like that. And it makes living beings so miserable. It entangles living beings. Then you start to understand the Four Noble Truths. No wonder the Buddha say the First Noble Truth, reality of life and existence, the eight conditions. Without this Dhamma understanding, it will lead to suffering. You will attach, you will cling, you will grasp, you will hold. Because to you, they are also real. Birth, old age, sickness and death is like so real to you. Because you think this form of mind is you. And you believe this form of mind is you, you will believe your loved one exists, living being exists. That's why it can cause you emotion and all those things. It can cause you attachment, craving, clinging, grasping, or the opposite of it is aversion, anger, hatred. So your like and dislike come from this self-delusion, sakayadity, not understanding the five aggregate of form and mind. That this one is dependent, originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. Therefore, it's impermanent, not real. They come and they go. And they follow nature's law. You can see them, the Panchaniyama. So if you want things your way, which is not nature's way, you suffer, you become afflicted. So you start to see all this very clearly. Then because it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. So how can you call, this is me, this is I, therefore all these are mine. There is no such thing as a self, a permanent and changing entity that you can hold on to, cling on it. This itself is dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. Dependent on condition it arises, dependent on condition it exists. Then when condition cease to be, it cease to be. So, no reality. Everything is mind-made, condition arising, causal phenomena, phenomenal world of consciousness, come and go, come and go. So when you start to understand the universal characteristic, then you understand the five aggregate of form and mind also the same, then the Four Noble Truths become clear to you. Then all the eight conditions that the Buddha described, you realize without wisdom, without understanding the Dhamma, you will attach, you will cling, you will suffer. That's why the second noble truth is the cause of arising of suffering, which is your craving, born of self-delusion, sakayadity. And what is craving? Craving is things that you like and dislike, you crave for. Whether positive or negative craving is the same. So you start to see from craving comes grasping, clinging, attachment, possessiveness, lust. Then the opposite of it, negative craving, is when you don't like it, you push it away. So that one will lead to anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, unhappiness. Then you realize when you don't understand, you develop fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow. Then all these are the result of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then you understand how the Dhamma arises. Why the Buddha said the three evil roots are the root of all evil. Where you can see them in your mindfulness, in your awareness. And all this become very clear. And the five aggregates of form and mind exhibit all this very clearly. Then the third noble truth also will become very clear to you. Because suffering need not be enlightenment in the here and the now. Cessation of form and mind, Nibbana, can be realized. Because the end of all suffering is the realization of the unconditioned Nibbana. So if you just relax, silent, and maintain awareness, and develop the wisdom, then finally the mundane mind will cease. Then the mundane mind that realizes itself and cease will lead to the realization of the unconditioned Nibbana, means the enlightenment state in the here and the now. Initially, it's just a glimpse. One moment of consciousness, good enough. It will lead to change of lineage. Then later on, the cessation will last for longer period. Then the form and mind that goes through the cessation will understand. Then if it's not time to parinibbana or die, then it will still come back. Because your life force, the five aggregate of form and mind, there are still conditions for it to arise. So you get to leave that phase, the third phase of Dhamma, the fruit of your hard work, means the life of an enlightened being, a noble one. So all this become beautiful, become possible. Hopefully this will benefit others. And you will also bring forth the faith and honesty. Then for Po Cheng, she will continue to go through and experience a lot more of this thing. So what I have described is like the final product. So she will go through. There are many, many things she will experience. Then she will come to understand all this on her own. Okay?
Yes, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you, Brother Teo, for your guidance.
Yeah, very good. Amitabha, yeah. Thank you for your good sharing.
Brother Teo, I have a question.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
This one is related to the, advanced care plan that we are encouraged to do in Singapore.
Oh, okay.
This means that I don't know whether to many people it's a taboo, but for me it's not. It's like planning how you want your death, like funeral, are the things you want to put in place, so that your family worry or concern about.
Yeah, so, there's nothing to worry. Yeah, very good.
You're supposed to write down. Plan,
you can do it when you have the understanding. Yeah, the form and mind is just a form and mind. So when the time comes, some of them donate their organs or whatever, not a problem.
Yes.
They will only do it after your consciousness has passed. So if you have the physical body that can still benefit you, some they donate for research. And all those things. So there is nothing to be like taboo or whatever, no. Then they also will do it for you, I think care for you very well. If I'm not wrong, Tsuchi also do it for people. And they will really plan all those things for you if you become a volunteer. So your Singapore you have,
Yes, so for us it's like automatic, we have to donate our organs unless you do not want, then you have to say you don't want. But for us automatic, everybody will donate,
Sadhu. So who is the one who is doing it for you? Is it the government or an NGO?
It's a charity organization
NGO,
NGO, correct. I go there to inquire about it and write it out.
Yeah.
So it's organ thing, yeah, I did not change it, I just let it be.
Yeah.
Then comes to like funeral, we put down there like Buddhist funeral, huh?
Yeah. You can decide, yes.
Yes, you have to put it down like are you supposed like put in a urn or you want to distribute
You can write it down. And they will actually follow your instruction to do it. Yeah.
Alright. So for me I'm thinking of throwing it in the sea. What do you think?
No problem. Yeah. Because that one is just element. No problem. It's up to you.
Because some feel that this one there is a concern, you know, but I put down
No such thing. Where you will know end of the day. The five aggregate of form and mind is not you, not real. Then when the consciousness separate, the physical body will go the way of nature. Yeah.
Yes.
But some people who wants to maybe make use of it to maybe further, what I should say, for further use. There are some people they wants to preserve their relics. Even Master Xuan Hua, he also said, just the whatever does, of course you have the condition and people have the understanding, if they know how to cremate and get your relic, they can do it, no problem. But whatever, even Master Xuan Hua said, just feed it, throw it to the sea or feed it to the ants or whatever, he said, whatever that you do that can benefit humanity or living beings, do it. Because it's just element. It's not you anymore. Even when you are alive, it was never you. It was just a, what they call dependent originating phenomena. Not what you think. So the fine aggregate of form and mind is empty. It's non-self. Non-self means not nothingness, not no self, not self, but in between. Non-self means even though it's not self, not a permanent unchanging entity, it's not self, but it has something. Means it's not totally nothingness, no self, no, it's in between. Means there is such thing as a human being, a segmented life that is subject to karma, that can be karmically conditioned out for the nature to come to this existential world, to do whatever it wants to do, to live life, to experience life, to go through the cultivation, to fulfill your vows and whatever. So all this, the cultivator will know. The bodhisattva who go this way, they will know. Then whatever you do with this form and mind is up to you based on your understanding. So society has started to maybe make use of some of the understanding to help the world. Especially organ donation, they realize that if you have flesh, then they have that sign piece of paper to execute it based on the society's law over there. So it will be done according to your will or your whatever instruction given to them. So they call it in Singapore, just now you use the word what?
Advanced care plan.
Advanced care plan, yeah. So they use a very good word. I remember last time there was a Kayamita also not married. She also wanted this. Then she came and asked, we had a discussion. Then I think she finally, wrote a will. Then the advanced care plan, I think she signed it out with another NGO or what, I cannot remember. Really. I say, I reach out, Sadhu. You plan for your whatever future to benefit society and humanity, which is very wholesome. But please do, if possible, let your relative or your close loved one knows your case is maybe your sister, so that there is no misunderstanding or argument or complication when the time comes, because sometimes they don't know. They say, I'm the sister, no. My sister never tell me, no. I don't believe you. So all these things may arise. So it's good to discuss with those whom you think can help you to develop the understanding, and let them know that you plan to do all this and you have actually done it, so that people understand. Mm. This is to avoid unnecessary misunderstanding of conflict. Very good. Sadhu to you for sharing.
Sadhu. Yes, I already informed my family members.
Ah, very good. Sadhu.
It's also a requirement. It's also
Yeah. Oh, they also advise you.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, they also know otherwise unnecessary conflict or misunderstanding.
Yes. Correct. Yes, thank you. Sadhu.
Sadhu. Thank you. For sharing. Yeah.